Between the Lines
with Sarah McInerney.
This is News Talk.
Naomi McElroy is here to talk about some of the week's stories and media matters that have caught her interest. Naomi, thank you very much for joining us.
You're extremely welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you too.
On this frosty cold morning.
On this frosty freezing cold morning.
Once again, you're wearing your coat in studio.
Yes, I'm feeling a little delicate, Sarah. I've been having a little bit too much of the Christmas spirit recently. Let's just put it that way.
All right, we're going to talk this morning about, well, there's a couple of different issues that have all come together, but we're going to start with Christine Keeler. Tell us about her for people who, the name might ring a few bells, but maybe they've forgotten her story.
Christine Keeler, well, she died this week, aged 75, mainly from lung cancer and kind of complications. She was a big smoker who had smoked her whole life, but Christine kind of hit the public eye when she was 19. She was having an affair with an English politician. It was the Profumo affair and he was John Profumo. But she was also at the same time sleeping with a Russian spy called Ivanov, which sounds very James Bond and thrilling. But basically, there was this guy called Stephen Ward. He procured girls for politicians and, you know, diplomats. And he was a slightly shady character, but he didn't seem to be motivated for any kind of, I mean, it's not as grim as it sounds.
He never actually called a pimp as
never
such.
Called a pimp, no. It seemed to be all based on friendship and glamour and that he liked to be at the centre of, you know, everything that was exciting and everything that was happening in society. So both Christine and her friend, who was a girl called Mandy Rice Davies, were kind of Stephen Ward's girls who, you know, there was a film made about it called Scandal a couple of years ago with John Hurt in the Stephen Ward role. So I suppose if you didn't know anything else about Christine Keeler, you would know her from the picture where she's completely in the nip, sitting on a chair, like the chair is turned around backwards, and so she's leaning up on the back of the chair, and she's very beautiful with brown hair. And I suppose that is the kind of image of her that never really faded, because she was never allowed to move on from it her whole life. She became kind of a recluse in the end. She had two brief, very brief marriages. They didn't work out, but she did have a son and she was close to him and his family.
So when this broke then, okay, so she's 19 years old, she's associating or found herself to she's fallen in with Stephen Ward into a friendship / relationship. It's all a bit murky, a little unclear. But anyway, she's with him in a way, and he introduces her to these rich and powerful men in high society. So through that, she meets Profumo, who's in the cabinet at the time, and she meets through a Russian spy as well, and she ends up having affairs with both of them at the same time, and that story breaks, and it's this huge scandal then in Britain.
Oh, it was massive, because I suppose the fear and the massive implication was that she could be getting information from Profumo and passing it on to the Russian. Now, to be honest, and this all happened in the 60s, there's been a lot of kind of looking into it. There wasn't really any whisper that that was what was happening, but it very easily could have been. And this is why people were, you know, so horrified at the time. I mean, initially everything was denied. Mandy Rice Davies, when she was on the stand, because it was a huge court case, it was put to her how, you know, different people had denied that she'd slept with them. And her response was, well, he would say that, wouldn't he? Mm. Which was kind of like her famous catchphrase about the whole thing. But I mean, when you think about it, if it happened now, it would bring down the careers definitely of the male politician, which it didn't at the time. Now, Profumo, he never kind of went on to do as well as he potentially could have. He was very much a rising star. But, you know, his career limped on. He kept working. I mean, she very much was the one.
I think he resigned from cabinet, didn't he? But he went into a charity and he was working in a charity for years and years and years.
And like nowadays, he would be absolutely, I mean, hung, drawn and quartered. And potentially, I mean, when you think about it.
Would he?
I think so, because the issue here, don't get me wrong, I'm not kind of focusing on the sleeping with a young girl. It's more the fact that like state secrets could have been passed to a hostile government at a time when like the relationship between Britain and Russia was terrible. Do you know what I mean? You have to talk, this is the
Donald
Cold
Trump.
War. This is the time when there's the whole Cuban Missile Crisis and everything going on.
From
that point of view, it was incredibly dodgy. I think as well, the thing that everybody forgets is like Christine Keeler was 19.
Well, this is what struck me, I suppose, about being particularly sad about her passing this week, is that she never got, in her lifetime at least, she never got redemption.
No.
Whereas Profumo did get redemption. He was seen as this, you know, he really atoned for his sins and he worked in charities and, you know, did his best. And the poor man who had been beguiled and enticed by this 19-year-old woman, this poor 46-year-old man, and I think actually she was 17 when he met her, at the time, Harold Macmillan, who was the British Prime Minister, called her a tart. You know, these were that was the language aimed at her. And her story has never been told in any sort of sympathetic way.
No, it was very much, she was a good time girl. You know, she was just out for a good time and she basically got what was coming to her, which is terrible, really. I mean, when you consider the years that she spent, like, nobody wants to live the life of a recluse. You know, that she obviously was just so kind of scarred and afraid by the way that she'd been treated that she just went into hiding. And also this week when she passed away, there were pictures of her online, like there was, you know, it was extensively reported on. And I just thought one thing that was really so terrible, the amount of people who are commenting on these pictures saying, you know, oh my God, the state of her, pity she didn't die a few years earlier. Like, because, you know, she was very ill. She had put on some weight, as I'm sure we all will have by the time we're 75, you know. Time had had an effect on her.
She and like, had got older.
She had, yes. She had allowed the passing of the years to age her, Sarah. What a terrible girl. And I just thought, like, the woman is dead. And a huge amount of the commentary was the state of her. She looks desperate. And you're like, do you really think she could freeze herself in time and stay in the nip on that chair forever? For one thing, it would be drafty.
All right. So that was back then. And I suppose what we're interested in looking at, given that that has happened this week, is where are we at now in, I suppose, that whole discussion? And also this week, we've seen the Time Person of the Year, which is maybe a reflection of where we are now.
Yes, which is the silence breakers, all the women who have come forward about sexual harassment, which, when you think of it, you were mentioning Donald Trump there a while ago. It's just so amusing that he was trying to claim that he was going to be the person of the year and they have gone for the complete opposite. I mean, you can't get much more opposite than a man who says it's okay to grab women by the genitals and then women who are speaking out about, you know, that exact thing happening to them.
So we have Ashley Judd and a couple of other well-known
names.
Yes,
but we have big names like Rose McGowan, but also kind of lesser-known names. I mean, one whose story I thought was really powerful was a lady called Juana Melara, who is a housekeeper in a big fancy hotel in Manhattan. And she said how, you know, it was, and I mean, I've worked in, I don't know if you've ever worked in a hotel, Sarah. I've worked in housekeeping, I've done waitressing, but I've done chambermaiding as well. And I mean, you do see a lot of stuff when you're, you know, cleaning people's rooms. And she said that she could completely put up with guests walking around in the nip or, you know, making remarks to her, or, you know, that was all seen in a day's work. But it was when fellow employees started groping her and it was caught on camera, and the hotel very much said, you know, why are you complaining? Just get on with it, do your job, that she started speaking out. And I suppose that's why it's so good that they haven't just focused on these. And don't get me wrong, sexual assault is terrible, whether it happens to the rich or the poor, but they have tried to get a cross-section of women who are speaking out from a lot of different industries. Mm. Because looking at the commentary, the way it's gone down the last couple of, well, months now, you would think that it's only been Hollywood actresses who were ever sexually assaulted in the workplace. And in the reality, it's everyone, really.
Yeah, so we see this Time Magazine of the Year cover and it is very powerful and it makes you think, wow, there's something really happening here, and that Me Too campaign really meant something. And that all signifies change. And then you see another article this week written by Dylan Farrow, who was Mia Farrow's daughter at a time that Mia Farrow was married to Woody Allen. And she has accused over many decades now Woody Allen of sexually abusing her when she was a child, when she was only 7 years old. Those sexual assault allegations have never been proven in court, but at the time, the prosecutor said there was probable cause to pursue a prosecution against Woody Allen, but that he didn't want to put the child, in this case, Dylan Farrow, through the court case. So it's not that there was no evidence that these were spurious claims, and there was probable cause to prosecute, but not a prosecution. And Dylan Farrow was writing this week saying, hold on a second. All these women are standing up going, look how great we are speaking out. And yet, on the other hand, we have many, many famous Hollywood women and men who continue to work with Woody Allen and turn a blind eye.
Yeah, and I thought it was a really, really excellent point. I mean, I have always had a massive problem with the fact that people don't have a problem with Woody Allen. And I mean, they seem to think, oh, he's this godlike genius director, so, you know, of course we can't slag him off, we want to be in his films. He hasn't even made a good film in 20 years. In the piece, Dylan Farrow, I thought she was really, really excellent. She talks about the likes of Blake Lively, who condemned Weinstein and said it's terrible and it's awful and, you know, all women have to speak up and we all have to stand together. And then was asked about Woody Allen and she said, oh, well, you know, I don't know Woody's family. It's dangerous to speak when you don't know. And, you know, like, for me, you don't know that everybody who's been abused spoken up about Weinstein really has. I mean, don't get me wrong, I completely believed him. I think most people do believe him. But like, if you're going
in amongst those tens and tens of stories, there may be one or two but that like, aren't quite right or not right at all.
If you're going to start standing on ceremony and saying, oh no, well, I can't speak out against this person because I, you know, wasn't there and didn't see it happen, apply that across the board. You can't say, I support these accusers in one case, but then in a case of a child being abused, you don't speak out. And I mean, there has been a lot of Woody Allen's PR team kind of fudging things over the years. I think most people would believe that it was all part of a custody battle that went terribly wrong, you know, the sexual abuse allegations. Actually, Woody Allen only started trying to get custody of the children after the sexual abuse allegations came out. And it's very similar to Roman Polanski, another director who people seem to excuse. I mean, Meryl Streep famously got up and, you know, gave him a standing ovation when he won an award. I mean, this is a man.
I'm sorry, just remind people about Roman Polanski.
Roman Polanski raped a child, like drugged and raped. I mean, she was, I think, 13. She may have even been 14, but like drugged and raped her. I mean, he can't go into America because there's an outstanding warrant for his arrest. And all these famous types constantly lobby on his behalf and say, poor old Roman Polanski, he's doomed to live in Europe. He can't go home. Yeah, because he raped a child. You know, I mean, I don't care how good a director you are. There are some crimes you can't associate with the people who've committed them, at least not while they're still walking around purposefully evading justice.
So what's the difference here then between Woody Allen, Roman Polanski and Harvey Weinstein? I mean, is it critical mass? Is it that you don't have tons of children coming out saying Woody Allen did this to me, so we don't have loads of stories, so maybe it's just a little bit less believable because it's a case of he said, she said?
I hate to say it there, and I actually hope I'm wrong on this, but I think people just don't believe children sometimes. And I think sometimes it's because the crime of sexual abuse is so horrible and so grotesque that it's easier for people, often even the child's parents, to say, no, 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 they're just making it up, they're just looking for attention because they don't want to believe how terrible it is. I don't know. You know, that said, I think all that is changing, and I think that like kids who come forward nowadays, if anything is happening to them, would be believed, you know?
Yeah, are more believed, yeah.
And I mean, in the Roman Polanski case, like, he was found guilty in court. I mean, it's black and white. There is no grey area there. Like, everyone knows what he did, but still it gets excused as well by the likes of Meryl Streep. You're like, how can you excuse that?
Or is it that because these men in these instances are so talented that people want or are willing to overlook, and talented and powerful, are willing to overlook basically any indiscretion or assault or injury that they commit because they want to continue working with them? And in the Harvey Weinstein case, because there were so many stories, it became impossible to overlook it. And theory two, and maybe the two of them are compatible and they could come together, is that the reality is people don't believe women, or their instinct is to not believe women, or sort of, as you say, not believe maybe the extent of the abuse. And I'm going to throw into the mix here Roy Moore, the senator in Alabama, or the judge in Alabama, rather, who's running for the Senate. I'm sure most of our listeners will be aware of the case because it's been dominating the US media for the last couple of weeks. But he has been accused of predatory behaviour when he was 30 years old, dating children, dating young girls. A number of women have come forward and said, yes, he like would hang around shopping centres and we'd run away when we'd see him coming because we knew the way he was. That, you know, he went out with us. There's been high school yearbooks produced where he was writing, you know, you are so beautiful to young girls and things like that. So there's plenty of evidence. So we do have the critical mass in that situation of women coming forward saying, yes, when I was a young girl, he showed sexual interest in me. And yet he's topping the polls in Alabama and it looks like he's going to get elected. And the main reason for that probably being that they really need him to get elected for the numbers. The Republicans really need him to get elected. So in this instance, again, they're willing to overlook a critical mass of women coming forward and saying this is what happened because it suits everybody else's agenda. So what is going on here? Like, we think we've moved forward. We think a Time magazine, Me Too, the silence breakers is a big deal. And yet this is happening alongside that in America, right in front of our very eyes. This is happening. And we have an American president who was on tape last year talking about grabbing women by the genitals and got elected. So I don't know, have we? I really don't know, have we moved on at all? I'm not sure we're not going backwards.
And Trump loves Roy Moore as well. He's been tweeting in support of him around the clock. Yeah, I thought one thing you said there, Sarah, that I would think is the most important thing that I focus on with the Roy Moore stuff. He has 9 accusers. Of those, 2 of them were 14 and he was in his early 30s. And I'm sorry, I mean, I have heard people say, you know, oh, well, if a young girl puts on a lot of makeup, you know, she can look a lot older than she really is, blah, blah, blah. OK, you might think that a 14-year-old can possibly get herself up to looking about 16.
So this
16.
Is back to the tart to the 14-year-olds. This is back to Harold Macmillan, the Prime Minister in the 1960s, it's saying Christine Keeler is a tart.
Always on the girl, always on the child or the person who, you know, has basically been abused. I mean, 2 of them were 14, 1 of them was 15. In fact, the girl who was 15, Beverly Young Nelson, when she came out, she said, look, I actually voted for Trump. This is not politically motivated, you know, but he's a dangerous man. And exactly what you said about hanging around shopping centres. And it's not just, like, a lot of them thought that they were dating him, of the 9 women, but, like, some of them have said that he properly assaulted them. And it's just being allowed to lie there in a big kind of giant so what, you know?
Well, I mean, it started with some of his colleagues, Roy Moore's colleagues like Mitch McConnell, coming out and saying, I believe the women in this, you know, and I'm backing the women. And because Roy Moore, despite all that, has continued to top the polls and he's just brazening it out in the same way Trump brazened it out, those people who initially came out and said, I believe the women, are now saying, let the voters decide. They're not calling for his head anymore. They're not calling for him to resign. And we could have somebody now who was dating children when he was 30 years old, elected to the US Senate. See, this is the point at which, Naomi, you normally cheer me up and say, no, no, it's okay. Things are moving in the right direction and we're getting there. But, you know, I think 1960s Christine Keeler, how are you? We're right back there again where something happens and the women are seen as secondary citizens, or they're seen as they deserved it. They were asking for it. They're not really telling the truth. There's something about the mistrust in the women, and it's not ever about the man and the man getting what the man should get. Give me a note of hope. We have to wrap up. Give me a note of hope that this is not, we're not back in the 1960s. We're stuck in the 1960s despite what everybody else might be.
Okay.
Or what people might be trying to say.
These are isolated, older people in positions of power, and young people nowadays are cool and groovy and don't do this kind of stuff anymore. That's what I always come back to, Sarah. The younger generation. Think of the cool guys we know. They'd never do stuff like this. They'd be like, oh, gross. They would.
All right. I'm not convinced, unfortunately. I'm a little depressed. But Naomi McElroy, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Between the Lines on News Talk.